So today, we're reading from the fifth canto, chapter 5, verse 18, which is part of the teachings of Lord Rishabhadev. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Narayanam namaskritya.
Narayanam
chaiva narotamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudirayet Nasta Praeshu Avadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Rutama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Okay. Well, good morning, everyone. So like I said, we're reading from the 18th verse from the 5th canto, chapter 5, which is from teaching of Lord Rishabhadev. So we'll do the chant 5-5. So while that's getting ready... Lord Rishabhadev, he was partial incarnation of Lord Krishna. He was the son of King Nadi, and him and his wife were praying to have a child. So they did many austerities and many sacrifices, and they were able to please Lord Vishnu. So Lord Vishnu appeared to him and asked, you know, what he would like. And Maharaj King Nadi asked him, no, I would like to have a son like yourself. And so because he was pleased, Lord Vishnu gave him the benediction of us appearing as his child. So as a partial expansion of the Lord, he appeared in the womb of his wife, Mary Devi. And then she gave birth to Lord Rishabhadev. And Rishabha means the most beautiful, so or like the best of. And so he was like the best of the gods, devas. So Lord Rishabhadev became king, and he ended up having 100 kids. They're all to the same woman, Jayanti Devi. So that's kind of intense. out of these 100 kids, the first eldest one, his name is Bharat. So, you know, India is known as Bharat Varsha. You know, like we know, most of us know the story of Bharat Maharaj. That's the eldest son of Rishabhadev. And then, what we're reading from now, this verse is a part of the teachings of Lord Rishabhadev. He's instructing his sons on how to, on Bhagavad Dharma, you know, like how to apply the principles of religion in devotional service. So this is one of the verses. Is it up? It's okay, so we'll chant in response now. Guru na sasyat svajano na sasyat. Pita na sasja janani na sasyat. Daivam na tatsyan na patishta satsyan. Namo chayatya samupeta mrityum. Gurur nasasyat svajano nasasyat. Pita nasasya janani nasasyat. Daivam natatsyan napatishcha satsyan. Namo chayet sa samupeta mrityum. Gurur nasasyat svajano nasasyat. Pita nasasyan janani nasasyat. Devam natasyan na patishya satsyan. Namo chayetya samupetam rityum. Okay, we'll read the synonyms together. Guru, a spiritual master. Na, not. Sa, he. Syat, should become. Swajana, a relative. Na, not. Sa, such a person. Syat, should become. Pita, a father. Na, not. Saha, he. Syat, should become. Janani, mother. Na, not. Sa, she. Syat, should become. Daivam, the worshipful deity. Na, not. That, shat, should become. Not. Patit, a husband. Cha, also. Saha, he. Shat, should become. Not. Mochayit, can deliver. Ya, who. Petam ridzium, one who is in the path of repeated birth and death. Translation? Is one who cannot deliver his dependents from the path of repeated birth and death, should never become a spiritual master, a father, a husband, a mother, or a worshipful demigod. So purport, someone with the mic want to read? Carlos, would you like to read? Or?
Purport. There are many spiritual masters, but Rishabhdev advises that one should not become a spiritual master if he is unable to save his disciple from the path of birth and death. Unless one is a pure devotee of Krishna, he cannot save himself from the path of repeated birth and death. Tektva dehang punarjanma naiti ma meti sorjana. One can stop birth and death only by returning home back to Godhead. However, who can go back to Godhead unless he understands the Supreme Lord in truth? Janma karma cha me divyam evang yo veti tatvata.
We have instances in history illustrating Rishabhdev's instructions. Shukracharya was rejected by Bali Maharaj due to his inability to save Bali Maharaj from the path of repeated birth and death. Shukracharya was not a pure devotee. He was more or less inclined to fruitive activity and he objected when Bali Maharaj promised to give everything to Lord Vishnu. Actually, one is supposed to give everything to the Lord because everything belongs to the Lord. Consequently, the Supreme Lord advises in Bhagavad Gita, Yat karoshi yat shnasi yat jushoshi tatasi yat yat tapasyasi konte yat tat kurushva madapranam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me.
This is bhakti. Unless one is devoted, he cannot give everything to the Supreme Lord. Unless one can do so, he cannot become spiritual master, husband, father or mother. Similarly, the wives, Similarly, the wives of the Brahmins who were performing sacrifices gave up their relatives just to satisfy Krishna. This is an example of a wife rejecting a husband who cannot deliver her from the impending dangers of birth and death. Similarly, Prahlad Maharaj rejected his father and Bharat Maharaj rejected his mother. Janani na sa syat. The word daivam indicates a demigod or one who accepts worship from a dependent. Ordinarily, the spiritual master, husband, father, mother, or superior relative accepts worship from an inferior relative. But here, Rishabhadev forbids this. First, the father, spiritual master, or husband must be able to release the dependent from repeated birth and death. If he cannot do this, he plunges himself into the ocean of reproachment for his unlawful activities. Everyone should be very responsible and take charge of his dependents, just as a spiritual master takes charge of his disciple, or a father takes charge of his son. All these responsibilities cannot be discharged honestly unless one can save the dependent from repeated birth and death.
Thank you. So what's really interesting about this verse is that the spiritual master, like that all these people that are mentioned in the verse are on the same level, you know, like spiritual master, mother, father, teacher, husband. You know, they're all kind of like the same in regards to responsibilities and how we relate to those who depend on us. So that puts a lot of things into perspective. You know, because sometimes we think of a position of a spiritual master as being like a really big deal. Of a lot of responsibility, but at the same time, also becoming a mother, becoming a father is also a huge responsibility. And in the context of Lord Rishabhadev, like he's teaching, like I said earlier, Bhagavad Dharma, is like how to relate religious principles in devotional service. You know, so becoming a mother or a father or a husband is not just it's not just like a material responsibility. You know, like you have kids and then you just let them grow up and whatever comes of them at school. It's not like that in devotional service. We're seeing here that the Prabhupada in the purport is saying that that unless one can give Krishna consciousness to your kids, then there's no business in having children, because that's the purpose of it, is to be able to deliver your dependents. So that's really powerful when you think about it in that way, you know, that there is so much more to motherhood and to parenthood as than just begetting children. It's the responsibility of having them grow up in Krishna consciousness. So first, well, I wanted to see, like, what do you guys think is, like, what does it mean to deliver their dependence? You know, like, what does that mean to you guys? Like, what did you think of when you hear that? Yes? Yes? Oh, God. that might work in some cases. There's one devotee in Alacha who brings her baby to Mangalarti every morning. Yeah, but that's not everyone can do that. Anyone else say something? Yes. Yeah, it's true. Well, because we can, we can give Krishna consciousness, but it's up to them if they take it or not. You know, but that's the duty, is to be able to give that to them. And then I guess this depends on the individual. You know, you can't force someone to do anything. You know, yet alone try to you can't force someone to love someone. You know, so that's on a personal level. You saw anything?
Say it's like a personal level.
Yeah, that's also true.
Like, you have to strive to become Krishna conscious yourself, and then if that happens,
it's easier
for everyone else.
Yeah, that's a cool point. Yeah, scriptures say that if you become a pure devotee, then all your dependents, your descendants, and also your ancestors become liberated. So that's something that we can also strive for.
That's what I was going to say.
That's what you're going to say. Anyone else?
I would say to encourage them to chant Hare Krishna, because the chanting is so much stressed in this age. You know, Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Eva Kevalam. There's no other way. There's no other way but the chanting of the holy name, chanting the holy name, and chanting of the holy name. Another practical thing I think is if they, the parents encourage the kids to play the instruments, the drum and the kartals, they have really no other use than in the kirtan. And then they'll always be engaged in kirtan some or other just to play the instruments. So that's the way it seems like it's a practical trick.
Yeah, it's the only reason why Tony and Nanta Kishore are here. No other use. I'm kidding. Yeah, those are really good points. And actually, Srila Prabhupada here in the portrait also gives us a clue. He quotes this verse from the Bhagavad Gita. It's 4:9, Janma Karma Chame Divyam. He says that those who understand my activities and my birth into this world, like those who know where I came from and my activities, then those people will never take birth again. They'll be liberated from a path of repeated birth and death. So it's that simple, you know, just telling people or telling your dependents about Krishna and that, like, help them understand about, like, the Lord's transcendental pastimes, which include chanting the holy name. And then that in it, within itself is so powerful that it can deliver you from the path of repeated birth and death. So like the point, like Amy said, we can give it to our dependents, but also it's up to them to take it on. You know, there's no, you can't force anything onto anyone. You know, but at least the duty is there, is to give it to them, and then it depends on them if they take it. And then, so. And then another really important point is that no one, you know, like when they're considering like becoming like parents, you know, like a couple gets married and like they want to have kids, and they might feel feelings of some doubts, like, oh, I'm not sure if I'll be a good parent, I'm not sure if I'll be a good mom, I don't know if I want to do this, you know, like there might be some doubt, but no one waits to become like a perfect mother or a perfect father before they have kids. It's like an experiential thing. You have your children and then you learn through experience. In the same way, one shouldn't wait to become perfect in order to become a spiritual master. You know, because I think Prabhupada said you can, like, he wants everyone to become gurus, you know, and there's so many different types of levels of guru that one can become a spiritual master. And we can, by just giving a book on the street, you know, that can, to a certain extent, that's becoming someone's guru, because you're giving them knowledge, you know. But then, so there's a whole spectrum to the responsibility of becoming one's initiating spiritual master or instructing spiritual master. So one shouldn't wait to become like totally perfect and Krishna conscious in order to take on such a responsibility. And practically within ISKCON, we see the need for something like that. You know, there's a lot of so many senior disciples of Srila Prabhupada that are so qualified to take on this service, but for some reason it's not there, and then the few initiating spiritual masters that they are overburdened. You know, so traditionally the guru is someone who's local, you know, to the temple, that people know them, you can have a personal relationship with them, you can instruct on a more deeper personal level than just having like thousands of disciples all over the world. It's a lot more difficult to connect to. So in the future of ISKCON, a lot of that responsibility is going to lie on us, you know, that because here, you know, the people that are sitting here, if we look at each other, we are the future of ISKCON. You know, this is, like it or not. Oh, come on. Kalakanta Prabhu was scared.
You're our fearless leader, Kalakanta.
on that note, get out of here. yeah, like a lot of it is gonna fall on us. You know, that's what I don't know. It's kind of scary, like the responsibility. But at the same time, it's really cool when you think about it. You know, that we've been put in a position where we can learn about scriptures. We can learn about Srila Prabhupada, we can learn about the teachings of our acharyas, and we can help give it to other people. And right now we have the opportunity to do it by serving Krishna lunch, you know, like giving prasadam to people. We have the opportunity of doing it by doing Harinam at the farmer's market, at different places that we go, by giving people the holy name. And we have the opportunity to distribute books and do things like this, which is giving knowledge to people. But in the future, more responsibility would be required of us. With that in itself is also a huge responsibility, you know. But we've been, by Krishna's calls us mercy somehow or other, we've been given the association of so many wonderful Prabhupada disciples, like Kalakanta Prabhu, and we have Balava Saint Prabhu here, and it's just so wonderful to be able to have the opportunity to have this association, which is really rare. Like if you guys travel around America, then you go to different temples and stuff, you can see, like you guys know, that a lot of the temples, there are very few devotees, not so much association, but somehow or other we've all ended up here where there's so much association, so many amazing devotees, and so much to learn from, like so many people to learn from. And so we should really take advantage of that while we have this opportunity to connect to these people and to learn more about them, like to see, to learn, like hear about their the experiences with Srila Prabhupada and all these different things that they have to offer, because in the future, it is us who are going to be able to carry on Srila Prabhupada's legacy through these dear devotees of his. Don't get scared. But it's wonderful. It's a nice responsibility. Like when we were in Houston, we were talking to Vaisheshika Prabhu after one of the classes, a couple of us. And Vaisheshika Prabhu said something that I almost started crying when he said, I don't know, it really touched my heart. He said, you are carry on the mission of our parampara. But just hearing Vaisheshika Prabhu say it, you know, he has such a huge heart, it really touched me, and it made me realize, like, wow, we're continuing on the service of our disciplic succession, you know, like Srila Prabhupada might not be physically here anymore, our acharyas might not be physically here anymore, but through us, they're carrying on their desires, you know, like we are their instruments. So, which brings me to another point that I wanted to make is that, you know, sometimes there's a tendency of not wanting to speak or not wanting to give class or not wanting to be put in a in some sort of a position of leadership or management or some sorts because of a sense of false humility. You know, it's like, oh, I'm not qualified to do something like that, or I'm just a warming stool, like devotees like to say. And it's like, who says that? And you know, but really, we should if we see ourselves as instruments of Krishna, you know, that really none of that stuff that we're doing, nothing that we do comes from our own endeavor. Like if we pray if we pray and honestly ask to become a servant and an instrument of the Lord, then he will use us. So it's not by my own endeavor that things happen. It's because the Lord is choosing me, is using me as his instrument that things will happen. You know, like real humility is to know that the whatever I'm doing doesn't come from me, it comes from Krishna. And with those abilities, trying to do the best that we can in order to serve him. So we don't see ourselves as the doers. So in that way, when we see ourselves as instruments, then it becomes easier actually to be able to do things, because it's not on us, it's on Krishna. We're just like his puppets and he's moving us around. You know, it's not so much like what I'm capable of doing, so it's more like what blessings has Krishna given me, or what abilities has he given me to be able to utilize. You know, we all have different share of talents, the different things that feel comfortable doing, or different things that we like doing. So we use those talents and the things that he's given us in Krishna's service. And none of it comes from us. It's not because of us that anything happens. It's because of his mercy, you know, that Krishna gives us everything that we have. So in that way, it becomes a little more, it's not so scary, you know, to think of taking on more responsibility or thinking of eventually maybe even taking up the role of becoming someone's spiritual master, because we're doing it as a service to the Lord. It has nothing to do with ourselves. You know, like one doesn't become a spiritual master for personal aggrandizement. You know, we do it to help other people, to be able to bring other people to Krishna consciousness. One of the qualifications of a spiritual master, Prabhupada says, is that to be a mahatma, it means like great soul, one who knows Krishna. But that doesn't necessarily mean one who knows Krishna that in the way, indirectly, like one who has seen Krishna physically, personally. Like, once Srila Prabhupada was asked in an airport interview by a reporter, you know, like, have you seen Krishna? And Srila Prabhupada directed one of his disciples to answer the question. And his disciple said, you know, like, yeah, one sees, right? One sees Krishna everywhere, like in the trees, you can see, think of Krishna, or you can see Krishna, like Prabhupada gives an example. If you see, like when you see someone's glasses, you think of that person, you know? So in the same way, when you see something, you think of Krishna. But then Prabhupada interrupted him and said, no, I've seen Krishna face to face. You know, like Srila Prabhupada has seen Krishna. You know, but like Kanta Prabhu was telling me earlier, that necessarily, seeing Krishna doesn't necessarily mean seeing Krishna face to face, but also it means seeing Krishna through service, you know, through a dedication in our sadhana, through the desire to continue on in our sadhana and things like that. So through, like I said, like Mahatma is a one of the qualifications of a guru. So through our character, you know, through our determination and through our faith, that we also get we can also become a mahatma. So it doesn't necessarily have to be some like esoteric thing, like whatever, like event, like seeing Krishna. But through our character and through our determination, we can be able to become like proper instruments of Krishna, and with that faith, that we can be used as Krishna's instrument, then you know, we can do whatever it is that he needs us or would like us to do, if that's our sincere prayer, you know. And in the purport for this verse that Prabhupada quotes here from the Bhagavad Gita 4:9, he says at the end that one has to have, like this point, one has to have faith and determination in order to become Krishna conscious. And it reminded me of also what Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar of Instruction, that we must also have enthusiasm, patience, and determination in order to be able to accomplish things in Krishna consciousness. So if all of those things are there, then patience, you know, because we won't become perfect one day from another, you know. But at the same time, we have to have the determination that one day that will happen, and continue on with our Krishna consciousness and have an enthusiasm, you know, like be happy about it. You know, that's, this is a wonderful opportunity that we have here. And so with all those things, and eventually, you know, like we can do more and more service and take on more responsibility, more things for the sake of Srila Prabhupada and spreading his mission. Does anyone have any questions so far? Yes, Rukmini?
That feeling of not really feeling capable for any service, but also about false humility. How do you kind of differentiate between that? Because sometimes you can really feel like, wow, I really just don't know this, and I don't know how to give that to people. And then sometimes you just feel like, oh, well, you know, if I give this, I'll just be a hypocrite because I don't do that myself. So there's this kind of a fine line. So I don't know, how do you really determine if you're capable to do something?
Well, I would say, like, I don't know, even if you yourself aren't fully absorbed in doing something, like you're saying, if you say something to someone and you're not doing it, then you can be a little bit of a hypocrite. But if your intentions are to change that, then that's okay. You know, because we're not perfect. You know, and if, like I said, if we wait to become perfect, then, you know, like, we're just gonna sit around, like, you know, it's gonna take a while. You know, so we still, if our desire is to change, and we still try to give it to people. Like, people who go out and do book distribution, like, sometimes people who are new, they have the desire to go and give, you know, because they see how it's working for them. They might not know the process. You know, like Kanishtha Adhikaris, you know, they might not know, they might not have so much faith or so much knowledge in the scriptures, but they want to give it up. And even though they don't know it themselves, they still try. So there's no hypocrisy there. Because there's a desire to try to share something valuable with others, even though we're not there yet either. And then also sometimes we also have to see our intentions, you know, with the point of it, with the first part of your question. If we're saying, oh, I'm not qualified to do something out of laziness, then that's not good. You know, but if we're genuinely feel like we're not qualified to do something, then, but if it's something that we would like to be able to give, we can practice. You know, try to do it, and by experience we'll learn. You know, like, I remember the first time I gave Srimad Bhagavatam class, I was petrified. I was like, oh my God, I couldn't, you know, like, Shay, like, it was, like, totally frozen. And little by little, you know, just get a little more comfortable doing things. And even though I still don't feel qualified to give Bhagavatam class, still, you know, we try to do it. And then just, like, little by little through experience, then we gain more of the confidence required to do it properly.
I also think we have, like, the benefit of really great guidance, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, Kali Kantaru asked me to give class this week, and I said, like, I'm not being humble. I actually don't, I'm not qualified, you know. But, like, he encouraged me, and then Hridayananda Maharaj also encouraged me yesterday. And so sometimes I think we have the benefit of these, like, senior devotees who may see something in us that we don't see in ourselves, you know. Yeah. So if we can just trust them.
That's a nice point. Sure, of course.
So when I read this verse, I remember Woody Allen's comment that 90% of life is just showing up. Raising children, if you're there for them, you know, like you said, you can't determine what they're going to do, and they're going to take drugs or get pregnant or get arrested or all kinds of stuff, you know. But being a parent means you unconditionally love this child. And similarly, being a spiritual master means you give unconditional love and you are going to be there for this person. So in the nine processes of bhakti, or the nine stages of bhakti given by Rupa Goswami, you know, beginning with a little faith and then association with devotees and then practicing sadhana, then this miracle of anartha nivritti occurs where the unwanted things fade away. You know, we lose our bad habits. So then the fifth one is nishtha. That's a tipping point. You know, nishtha means firm faith, like nothing's going to shake me from my spiritual path. Mm-hmm. And that's the point at which one can responsibly say to somebody, yeah, I'll take you as a disciple and I'll be there for you. You know? And then after that, it's just, you know, like, what is it, Ruchi? A shakti means attachment. Yeah, I'm really attached to devotional service. Then Ruchi, yeah, this is fun. And then Bhavi, this is really fun. And then Prema, and you know, well, this is ecstasy. So, you know, is somebody in Nishta or Prema, you know, who can tell? There's no way to measure. Like when Prabhupada talks about seeing Krishna, this is an expression of Prema, the highest stage of devotional service. So I really appreciated your point. If somebody thinks I have to be a prema to be a spiritual master, then it's just like overblown. The important thing is nishta. That was my point.
Thank you, Prabhu. I also wanted to say, last year, actually, I thought about this when I read this verse. I was like, wait, hold on. I just recently heard a class about this. And then I remember that actually Kalakata Prabhu gave a class on this verse in Mayapur last year during the GBC meetings, and it was one of the best classes. And I just wanted to share a little bit about what he said and then what my experience was during the class. Kalakanta Prabhu was making this point of that one shouldn't wait to become perfect in order to become a spiritual master, you know. And because it would be so nice, there's so many of his godbrothers that are so qualified to be able to take on the service, but for some reason, I mean, I don't know why, but there's not that. They don't step up for that. So he was making that point. And then also he was sharing about those people who inspired him in his life, you know, to continue on in the devotional service. And it was really nice to hear because, I mean, we see Kalakanta Prabhu here every day, but I never heard from him, like, what it is that keeps inspiring him to continue on in his devotional life. And he told stories about how Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, Yamuna Devi, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj were really there for him in his spiritual life and really inspired him to continue on. And then he started talking about the Krishna house, and I was sitting there in the temple, Radha Madhava temple, in this like ocean of like 1,000-ish devotees, and he's talking about how cool the Krishna house is, and like how nice that, like, he's just like telling up, like, just kind of like giving an overview of what we do here, and how he's managed to, he was giving like managerial tips, I guess, you know, for the devotees there, like if they wanted to do something like this, how to make like a successful preaching center, basically. And I was just sitting there in the crowd, like the only person from the Krishna house, crying my eyes out. I was just like sitting there like, oh my God, Krishna, like Radha Madhava. I was just looking at him, I was like, I'm so fortunate. Like, I just felt like so, so grateful to be part of the Krishna house. I was just like crying, and people around me are like, because the class was just like normal, like a beat managerial stuff, and I'm sitting there like pouring my eyes out. And then I realized, you know, like how fortunate I am, and these last couple of these last couple weeks I've been feeling really like, oh my God, I miss Mayapur, you know, because I spent like 4.5 months there, and I'm really attached. And I know for those of you who have been in India, you can, or in the Holy Dham, you can understand, you know, like your part of your heart is left, or your heart is left there. And I was thinking, man, I really wish I could go back to Mayapur, or like spend some time there and do some service. And then I just feel like it's perfect that I got this verse, because I was like thinking about exactly this class and how I felt sitting right in front of Radha Madhava, thinking, I'm so fortunate to be able to be here at the Krishna house. And we really have no idea how lucky we are to be here. And after the class, some of my friends from Bhakti Shastri, they came up to me. He's like, wow, is he your temple president? <He's> like, yeah. It's like, wow, you're so lucky. I'm like, yeah, I know. So, like, you know, because of Krishna's mercy, somehow, you know, we've been blessed, all of us, to be here in such a nice place, where we have such a nice opportunity for all of us to, like, get together, to learn, to so many different things, you know, like learning from how to, like, you can learn how to make lemonade and pump and serve lemonade to, like, hundreds of people, and then you learn how to give class and learn mridanga, whatever. You know, there's so many things that we learn here at the Krishna house. Learn how to interact with people and how to tolerate people living in a small community, you know. It's part of community living. Yeah, it's so, we're really blessed, you know. So, and I feel that that we really do have, because of this great opportunity that we've had here at the Krishna House, you know, this doesn't exist anywhere else. And I don't think it's by chance that we who are here are here. No, this brings me back to the point of responsibility. Like, I feel like we do have a sense of, like, a responsibility to be able to give back what we've learned here. Because, like I said, not everyone gets the chance to do something like this. And we should be conscious of that. You know, like, I don't want to scare you guys away or anything. You know, it's a beautiful thing that to be able to have given such a wonderful gift and try to... So we want to try to utilize it and give it back. Give back as much as we can, you know, to other people's. And in any way possible, you know, some of us will become mothers. Some will become fathers. Some, the husband, wives, like, well, all that. And some of us might actually become spiritual masters, even maybe one of the ladies. And because we have been given such a wonderful gift, you know, it would be a shame to not give it back. You know, actually, it's kind of selfish not to. So we should take advantage of this. You know, like, really try to learn as much as possible while we're here and take advantage of all the beautiful things that we've been given and try to give back as much as we could in our own way. You know. Anyone have any questions, comments, corrections? Yes, Valentina?
You just made the point of how management is actually a service and how everyone's just in that position is just trying to do their best. I think it's really important, especially being in this type of community, for us to keep that in mind because a lot of times not being in that position is very easy for us to maybe judge easier, not having in mind that, for example, you're just actually doing so much more than you probably were hoping to do.
Start crying. Anybody else have a comment, question? Yes, Krishna.
I sort of have a sense that I should, like, you know, encourage people more in devotional service, but I don't really, like, know how to do it beyond, like, you know, giving classes and doing kirtans and stuff. So I guess I feel like, you know, I'm not doing as much as I could, but I don't really know what I could do in particular more. So if you could, like, tell me some ways you think I could encourage people more, that would be useful for me.
Your service is perfect for Prabhu. Well, I don't know if you know, but through your enthusiasm, you inspire us a lot. You know, just to see your determination and how eager you are to always do your service, that for us, well, I speak for myself personally, and I've heard other people say it too, that in itself is really inspiring. You know, just to see the eagerness, enthusiasm. Like, a Pratik Prabhu also, he comes up to me often, he says, I'm so sorry, Mataji, we always take service from you and we can't do anything, but Pratik's enthusiasm is enough, you know? Just to see him, you know, so eager to dance and to be in kirtan, and that is a huge service within itself. You know, so sometimes just by doing our service properly and being happy and enthusiastic in whatever it is that we are doing, then that itself is good enough to inspire others. You know, because when we see the process working in other people, then that, at least for myself, that gives faith, you know, that the process is working. Because there's only so much you can, at least from my experience, there's only so much you can tell people. There's only so much you can say, that sometimes it comes in through one ear, comes through the other. You think you're saying something inspirational, but really they don't care. They're not listening, you know. But when they see it visibly working, then that is a huge inspiration. So you're always encouraging us, Krishna Kripa Prabhu, with that attitude, like that your eagerness that you have.
It's inspiring to be here and see people willing to be encouraged, you know?
Yeah.
There's so many people doing amazing things, like all these people going out on book distribution that I'm still shy about doing, even though they've just been around for like a year or so. It's like really amazing.
Or you can also point a finger at them, tell them you're at Maya. You're in Maya, Prabhu. Maybe that will work. That was a joke. Just in case.
No. I guess I could tell some people about giving classes or learning verses, if anybody wants inspiration in learning verses. I could,
yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Thank you, Prabhu.
It would be really nice to have you teach us how to give classes. But yesterday I was at Krishna Kripa's meditation class for new people, and listening to him speak about how to meditate and speak from the Bhagavad Gita. And I was thinking, I'm so lucky that I can hang out with him. The things he's saying are so wonderful. And I was thinking, you know, I could be somewhere watching a movie or something, but I just want to hang out with devotees like this one. So, thank you.
Thank you, Prabhu. See, point taken. You know, like our enthusiasm, your enthusiasm is really inspiring for all of us. Anyone else like to say something, share something?
40% is what you say to people, but they say 60% is actually what you do.
Yeah.
So if you're saying, you're doing what you're saying, then it's like the knockout punch.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise,
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, we have to teach by example. You know, like we don't just say things; we have to act on them. You know, that's what it means to be an acharya. You know, it literally means to teach by example. So that's how you make the biggest impact in someone, is when whatever it is that you're preaching, you know, like you also act on it. Otherwise, it's just hollow words; they don't mean anything. Yeah, so chose a great day to be late with the offering. So, yes, Rupa Chandra Prabhu, can you pass the mic down, please?
I just have maybe a comment, and maybe you can elaborate on the purport, where Srila Prabhupada gives the example of Prahlad Maharaj, Bharat Maharaj, and Bali Maharaj, who sort of rejected their superiors for spiritual purpose.
Yeah.
But I think that, how do we take it into proper context within our lives? For example, in Prahlad Maharaj's case, he rejected the instruction of his father, but he did not actually break the relationship with his father. So to me, that is important, that sometimes if our parents say something to us, we may not accept the instruction if it's contrary to Krishna conscious principles, but we don't break the relationship with them. I was wondering what you think about that.
I guess that's a tough balance, you know, like the example, what you just gave, like I have the same kind of relationship with my father, you know, personally, like my dad tells me to do all these things, but, you know, most of them are like contrary to Krishna consciousness, but I still talk to him, you know, like I call him every once in a while and he asks me how I'm doing, blah, 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 and all that stuff. So it's important, even though if our parents aren't necessarily devotees or not so necessarily inclined to Krishna consciousness, that we still maintain a relationship with them, because it's our duty as children, you know, to take care of them. especially like in the future, eventually, like they raised us and they took care of us when we were kids, when we were babies. But when they get older, it will become our duty to take care of them. You know, that's part of a Anarshan Dharma. Even if our parents are devotees, you know, it's still our duty to take care of them. Unless they're like totally, totally inimical and they don't want to have to do anything to do with us, then the relationships just stay there, you know, because it's important, you know, and it's, you know, like, and also for them to see that Krishna consciousness isn't totally alienating, you know, that we can still function in society without, by being devotees. Okay, so I'll end class here. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.